Podcasting from London, Ontario, Canada, this is The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. An interview show where creative people talk about what inspires them to pursue their dreams and do what they love. And now, your host, Karis Thomas.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. I'm Karis Thomas, your host, and Carrie Hishon, my guest host, is already laughing at me. So I'm going to pick on you. Say hi, Carrie Hishon.
Hi, Carrie Hishon.
Great. And of course, with me behind the producer's table is Luke Bainbridge.
Hello, everyone.
And with us today is Danny Ostropolik. Yay me, I said it right, I think. Yes. Author and actor and newcomer to London. Say hello to the world, Danny Ostropolik.
Well, hello, world.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's going to be a great day. Danny, we've only just met you, and we're really excited about this particular podcast to find out about you and to find out about your creative process, because we just discovered that you are an author, soon to be published, we hope, fingers crossed, of children's books. Yes, am
yes.
I correct? So can you tell us a little bit about that and a little bit about what brought you to this chair today from, you know, wherever you're from?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm from Chatham originally, so came to London, and I mean, growing up, I've always been writing. And my brothers used to laugh, and I have three older brothers, so writing at home was never the coolest thing to do. But I just loved writing and reading, so inevitably one morning I was about to get into writing another book, and I decided, you know what, I never read children's books growing up. I'm going to just warm up with a children's book.
Hang on. As a child, you didn't read children's books?
Let me clarify. I read Dr. Seuss and Robert Munch, and that was pretty much the extent of the books I read when I was a kid. I mean, okay. I read a lot of other sort of poetry and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was that kid. I read the poetry, and yes. I was well admired for that.
Ladies and gentlemen, another nerd on our show. We're all nerds here. We're comfortable in that nerdy skin.
Good. Then I'm in good company today.
Yes, you are.
But so I decided I would just start writing this book. And when I started writing it, I just had so much fun. The imagination, the side of my brain with the imagination, I'd never really used that before in this capacity, and it was just a lot of fun to be able to sit there and write this book. And by the end of it, I had created Dreamland, which is the name of the first book I had written, and inevitably that is the book that was deemed to be published next year.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And you were telling us before we started that you've actually written more than one. You have this volume of work that you're starting to build.
I have a volume of work quite extensive on my computer. I spend a lot of time writing. Mm-hmm. When it came to children's books, I became addicted to writing them. Not reading them in the slightest capacity, because I didn't want to in any way, shape, or form mimic another author.
Right.
And I felt, having not read too much children's books growing up, this was a simple way of doing that. Mm-hmm. So I just kept writing. And so the second book that I wrote was called Help, My Pillow's Trying to Eat Me.
So, best title ever.
Yeah, exactly. I was killing myself writing this. It was just so funny. I brought back the character from the first book, brought him back in, and brought his mother into this one again. And the pillow comes to life and tries to eat him throughout the night, and he has to battle this pillow. It sounds so silly, but honestly, writing this book, I was just dying. Okay, it was just so funny.
I hope someone at Disney's listening, because like, we have the first movie and the sequel ready to be done.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Fantastic.
So are you looking to make this into a series, or are they like standalone books that you could just pick one up and read it?
Okay, well, they are standalone books. It's not a series, so there's no continuation of the story. Mm-hmm. I wanted to bring back the characters, and it was actually, when I wrote the second book, I had never intended to put Howie, which is the character in the young boy in the book, I never intended to bring him back, and I didn't write him into that book whatsoever. And maybe about 8 months ago, I looked back at the story, and I thought, no, I want to incorporate the same characters into this. Mm. And so I have a few other books that now I'm looking back into, and I'm thinking, let's maybe incorporate this character into this and maybe continue the character. But no, each book in itself you can read on its own. And that's ultimately what I wanted to be able to do. I didn't want anyone to have to feel like you have to buy each one in an order, because I don't even do that now. I can't imagine a child doing that or their parent wanting to do that. So
you have these books that are sort of ready and waiting mm-hmm. for readers. And you were telling us before we started that you were in the process of working with an illustrator. And that was actually one of Matt's questions. Matt, who couldn't be with us today, guest host Matt, he wanted to ask what's the work relationship like between a writer and the illustrator?
The relationship I have with the illustrator is fantastic. I mean, he and I were both new to this, so he is not an illustrator in the slightest capacity. He was just a friend of mine that I asked to do the drawings. And he took Dreamland and basically took everything from my head and put it exactly on page as I had imagined it. So originally he was just going to do that, and another illustrator was actually going to take it over, and we were going to go from there. Okay. However, I loved his drawings so much, I just said, look, I'm new to this too. Why don't you be the illustrator for this? And that way it's a new project for both of us.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. And so since then, I mean, it's ultimately just pulling out what's in my head onto a page, mm-hmm. but I can't draw worth anything. So when he starts drawing, it's magic on a page, and I can't even begin to describe how an artist is able to do this. I mean, there's paintings on the wall that are just beautiful here, and I can't even imagine trying to do one of those. Better yet, even just trying to draw a cartoon on a page. So thank goodness people can draw.
But then there's those people who look at the blank page or that blank computer screen and would have the same fear.
Oh, that's true.
With putting those words down.
Oh, yeah. And don't get me wrong. As a writer, you're ultimately going to have that. I suppose you might even have that when you're doing a podcast. There might be that part where, oh, what do I say now?
Yeah, exactly. I have that frequently. Oh.
I feel like I just outed you there.
You haven't outed me. No, everyone on the internet has heard that.
They've already heard that. Okay.
She's been outed long before today.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. But I mean, there's always that blank page. I think every writer deals with that blank page. Yeah. But the issue doesn't come up as much. I fear you just pull yourself away from it and go back to it, and you should be able to do it. Just you got to get your head around it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that takes a day. Sometimes it takes more than a day. I've been off writing for sometimes a month just because it's just not there. And if you can't get the right juices flowing for it, mm-hmm. nothing good's going to come out on that page anyway. So mm-hmm. what's the point of doing it? Mm-hmm. However, when I wrote Dreamland within an hour.
Cool.
Whereas none of my other children's books, I did that.
Right.
So they took me weeks upon weeks to write these things, whereas this one was written simplistically.
Yeah, so it was ready.
Exactly.
It was ready.
Exactly. And I didn't plan out the storyline at all. I just woke up, wanted to warm up writing, and that's what I did. And ultimately, I'd never turn back from there.
Okay, so you've just said two things in there that I want to go back to. So I'm going to do the first one. And the first one was that you talked about how this was new for you and it was new for your illustrator friend. Mm-hmm. And you just wanted to, you know, go on that journey together. Sound familiar, Luke?
Yeah.
kind of like us. But it's exactly this sort of thing that I constantly read about in my big inspirational guy, Mr. Hansen, and how he would just look for people who were like-minded, who wanted to try new things with him. And I mean, it's the same as with our good friend, Joe. Every time Joe and I do a show, Joe Risha, who will be on our podcast sometime soon.
He's awesome.
Every time we do a show, his rule is we have to do something, or I have to do something, he says, that I've never done before.
Yeah.
With my set design, with my stage management skills, something I have to do, something I've never done before. And that was something I was unconsciously doing. And that was something that we now consciously do. And we make sure that we try at least one. Mm-hmm. And so that's the same kind of mentality, I guess.
Oh, definitely. I mean, even when I approach music, if I'm approaching a song, I'll look at that and say, you know, I want to be able to practice this. But each time I do it, I want to try it a different way and try something new with that. And the same thing is with writing. I'll write a page of work and say, okay, that's a great page, but I'm going to rewrite this now a different way.
Wow.
And see if this works. I don't always do that. And it's easier to do that with a children's book than it is a novel.
Oh, really?
Okay. I'll say that. That's just because it takes less time. But, you know, the creative element between the illustrator and I, you know, it was quite accidental. And that was kind of nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, we both work full-time jobs, and we do a lot of other things as well with our time. So we can invest as much into the book as we would like. However, the book kind of came by surprise in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of nice. And we're not sure which direction we want to take the entire series. I've done many readings in that for these books. There's been great response. And his illustrations have gotten a great response as well. So it's been kind of nice where neither of us have really jumped into this sort of career field before. And we're both new to it. But it's kind of nice learning about it mm-hmm. at the same time. So
cool.
Mm-hmm. Nice having a partner in crime.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
Very nice.
Isn't it?
Well, there's three of you. There's only two of us.
Yeah. Well, you know, get more partners, you get more crime done, right?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So my other thing that you said that I wanted to glom onto was you woke up and you said you wanted to do a warm-up, mm-hmm. a practice. So, and it reminded me of, we've had artists who say that, you know, they like, they try to paint or draw or sketch mm-hmm. every day, or they try to write if they're an author every day, or they try. And this past summer, I'm not a visual artist, but I would like to be, and I never feel like I have the time. So this summer I said to myself, okay, you're going to draw one thing every day, even wow. if it's crap. Who cares? Because if it's crap, I don't have to show it to anybody. It's my it's my stuff, right? And of course, now I'm back in school and I'm not drawing every day, but I actually did it. And I pretty much drew almost every day. So wow. is that writing? Is that something that you try to do every morning?
Whenever you get up? I don't write in the morning. At that point in time, I had my summers off just with my job, the students gone. So I spent my summers writing. So I would spend my entire day, frankly, just up in my office or outside on my laptop, just writing. But what I do mostly, if I am writing, I'll write in the middle of the night. So I'll write between like 12 and 4 in the morning.
Right.
And I don't write every day. But if I do, I write at that time. It's quiet. Nothing's on the streets. No one's up in my home. I can just focus on what I'm doing. And because, to be honest, As theater folk, I'm sure when you do something, sometimes when you're learning how to do something, you want to enclose yourself in a room and do something stupid just to try and get the characters right.
Yeah.
And you act out what you're doing. Every little story that I've written has been acted out.
That's cool.
Because if it's not funny to be in front of the kids and tell this story to them, how's it going to be funny on the page?
Right.
Or how's it going to be entertaining on the stage? And Dreamland's not a funny book, but I mean, the rest of them have a comedic element to it and more are based on that. So I figure if the children aren't going to laugh, then it's not going to pop out on the page either. So I took it from a theater perspective and I thought, I'm going to act out everything I do. And one time my partner had walked in and he's just staring at me. What are you doing? And I'm just like making all these faces and trying to act out this character. And I explained it to him and he just turns away and just laughs and walks away. But that's how you do it. And that's how I approach music. That's how I approach. I don't draw. I'll give you credit. I would not do that every day because I know I would look at that every day and think, wow, that is crap. So I just
avoid
that.
There were some days.
Yeah. No, see, with me, it'd be every day. So, there's a great reason why I have an illustrator and I don't do them myself, because I am probably worse than most people in every grade in elementary school. So I'm including kindergarten and JK there. So they don't let me draw.
Well, you know, we can't all do everything.
I wish I could, though. I mean, I have so much appreciation for art, but I just can't do it. I think that's why I have so much appreciation for it, is because
probably.
I just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know. Yeah. there we go. I'm catching some of Carrie's disease. But I loved your story about acting it out. And I was immediately thinking YouTube video capture. Like, wouldn't that be great if your partner was like sneakily filming
the artist at work?
I'm petrified because I'll sing at home.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all of you guys do this. But
for sure.
I like to sing when I'm alone. I sing with my friends and family there. But when I'm practicing, I practice mm-hmm. alone, because mm-hmm. it's not always good when you're practicing.
Right.
Just like when you're writing a book or doing anything like that. So I sometimes get caught, because I'll be in my room. They'll still come into the apartment. So I sometimes get caught, but for the most part,
it's that freedom to make the mistake.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I agree with that, because, when I'm practicing, I want to be alone for doing that, because mm-hmm. I don't want anybody to hear me, because I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to just sing my heart out and be silly and blast out whatever notes that come out. But then people think that's kind of weird because I like to practice by myself, but they're like, you know what? You go out on stage and you sing or perform for big audiences.
After many rehearsals.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's not perfect when you first put it out there.
It's not the same as karaoke.
No.
It's exactly. Not the same. Like for people who don't perform on stage, who like regularly, but who love karaoke, they have a different, approach to their singing, right? Mm-hmm. It's more devil may care, I'm out having beers and, you know, and that sort of thing. For all of my friends who are performers, if we're going out to karaoke, we have our three set songs that we know how to sing, and those are the ones that we're going to sing. And I'm not just going to go through the book and randomly pick something that I kind of know, because that's just...
I did that once. It was horrible. I don't know Rocket Man by Elton John, apparently. At all.
I had the same experience. I picked a song that was in Rock of Ages. I don't even remember what it is anymore because I think I blocked it from my memory because it was so bad. I was like, oh, yeah, I totally know this song. Mm-hmm. No, I don't.
Yeah, we did that the other week. I took some of the cast of Seussical to karaoke.
Right.
And I'm there often, but I always do ballads. That's just the type of music I know, and it's the type of music that I can sing.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes the mood down in the bar just a little bit. So yeah. Everyone's there slightly intoxicated, and then all of a sudden there comes this soft Josh Groban song. It's like, oh, mood goes down just slightly.
Yeah, yeah. Or the jazz standard or the old style Broadway musical song that is the sort of thing that I'm going to sing.
That's why we need our friend Kate. She does Whip It every time.
Yeah.
I heard her do Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto.
I was going to say, and Domo Arigato.
With the dance. She has a dance that goes with it. Yeah. It's pretty fantastic.
Come home, Kate.
Now that's theater.
Kate is theater. Yeah.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah. I also was enjoying your story about how you make all the crazy faces and all of that sort of thing to act out your stories, because again, I'm going to make a Muppet connection here. I saw them live this past summer, and so you see the puppet above and then you see the performer below, and they've repeatedly said in interviews and things like that, don't look at us because we're making ridiculous faces in order to channel this character all through their performer's body but out their hand, you know, and they do, because if they're doing more than one character, it's crazy. Like if you saw Seth MacFarlane's monologue from Saturday Night Live just a little while back, and he did almost every voice, probably not every voice because he does thousands, but a whole pile of his voices from the show, and he doesn't skip a beat, but his face completely changes.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. People who can do all those incredible voices and change, switch on a dime. Just crazy.
I saw that the cast of The Simpsons was on Inside the Actor Studio.
Yeah.
And they took
Dan
them through.
Dan Cast and now, oh my gosh.
Through all the characters of Springfield, and it was amazing. Even their body posture changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you eventually embody that character. So that's ultimately what it comes. But I mean, doing the faces, I grew up watching Jim Carrey. So, and he gave an interview once where he said, I used to sit there in front of the mirror and just play with my face. So growing up, I took that to heart. And I would sit there in front of the in the mirror, and I'd be in the bathroom just like doing the Home Alone thing and just like mashing my face,
trying
to do weird
around.
Faces. And inevitably, like this cartoonish characters come out, and I mean every little character that I want to embody or I want to put into a story, I want to make sure that I can portray that character. And in some way or another, that's, you have to make those faces, and you have to like get right into the characters just to put it on there, because it makes so much more sense when it's written.
And Carrie, the lovely lady sitting next to you, is also author, playwright, you know, we could split hairs on that.
Yeah,
playwright. Did you do similar things?
Yeah, actually, when I was writing...
Especially for playwriting, you'd have to.
I've written two plays that have been performed with the Light at the Palace, the youth theater company at the Palace Theater. I wrote two shows for them, After Alice, which was a kind of a sequel to Alice in Wonderland, where Alice grows up and has kids, and her kids go back to Wonderland, even though they don't believe in Wonderland. And then I wrote another one called Inspector Noble and the Figure in Black, which was kind of a takeoff of Humphrey Bogart and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and all those kind of detective spoofy.
But also children's theater. So very much in line with children's books, I would think.
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. But yeah, I would go through and because I wanted to make sure that all the characters didn't sound like Carrie. And I had to make sure that they all had their individual voices and their individual, you know, personalities. And I kind of, I wrote out character bios for them and kind of imagined what they'd look like. But what I actually found kind of interesting and useful is during the first performance of it with Light at the Palace, I had as an acting exercise, all the kids go home and write out their own character bios of the characters.
Without seeing yours.
Without seeing mine.
Cool.
And I told them, okay, tell me what you think your character is like. How old are they? Where are they from? Are they originally from where they are in this play? How old, like, do they have brothers and sisters? What do they do with their free time? All this stuff. And I got them back and some of them were fantastic. Like all of them were really insightful. Even if the kids just wrote like three sentences on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
I had one little girl who wrote out this amazing bio and like decorated it and she drew a picture of her character. And I kept a lot of them because mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's really cool that you think that. And I like that. And now I'm going to put it in.
Nice.
Kind of inserted in the show because I do want to rewrite it and make it available for other companies to do, and that's one of my goals is to, you know, make it a full actual piece and have it available for people to, you know, buy the rights and perform it.
Right.
Because it's a youth theater show, it has like 25 characters in it, which
right. So
schools
lots of
can do
opportunity
or,
there.
Yeah. But I thought that was really useful too. So kind of it was almost like a workshop in that manner.
Sweet.
So using my own stuff as well as the feedback from the kids, which was fantastic. You know, if you want feedback for anything youth related, just get a kid to read it.
For sure. And
they'll give you really honest feedback.
Oh, that's
they're yeah. not afraid to say, oh, this sucks, or it's not funny, or that was hilarious, I like that part.
So have you had children's feedback on your work?
Well, somewhat to yours. What I did once, I was doing a reading, and so I had roughly the same amount of pages for Dreamland as I did the kids that were there. So I gave each kid a page. And what Dreamland is, it's this character, Howie, goes to Dreamland in his dreams. And he creates this place within his dreams. So every time he goes, he creates something different.
Mm-hmm.
So every page is something different. So it was something where they were able to go and draw each page something different. And it was fantastic. I mean, they had taken the words that were written and interpret in ways I didn't even know that they would, and it was kind of neat. So I've done this almost every single time where I'll go and I'll bring blank pages of the book with just the writing on it, and I'll have them draw, and I have a bunch of them at home because it's really quite astounding to see where they take their imagination.
So 40 years from now, when you're like a worldwide recognized author, there can be a retrospective look of the work of Danny Ostropolic and his development as an artist,
well,
right?
What we would love to do inevitably, we want to, this is sometime in the future, but we want to do some sort of website, and we would love to be able to have the kids draw some of the pictures and pick the best one and
nice.
Have a book online of just the best pictures of each page.
Because
mm-hmm. I mean, the more you do this, the more pages you get. So the
An
best ones
online book.
And figure, I'll write a story and we'll have the kids actually do the drawings for it. And so the best pictures for each page will mm-hmm. dictate what the story actually looks like. So, I mean, it obviously won't flow perfect, but it has that creative element where it's not illustrated by an actual illustrator. It's through the imagination of the
right.
actual child.
But think of the empowerment that you would be giving to your audience by having them contribute that way.
Well, they can do the drawings that I can't.
Well, then maybe one of those kids would grow up not saying that he can't.
Well, there you go. Right? And if that's the difference it makes, it was well worth it. Even
yeah.
if just one kid
maybe
said
you
that.
Needed a Danny Ostropolic when you were young.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
I think it'd be really useful, too, for going forward with future ideas for more books because it's almost, I think of it as a dramaturgical process. I guess it would be the writer's process,
mm-hmm.
however what you want to word it. But I often get ideas for new shows or blog posts just from talking to other people and getting feedback. And I mean, if you're specifically aiming your work towards children and, you know, children's books and youth theater, you know, those are the best people to get feedback from. And who knows, maybe some idea that you get from one of your audience will inspire you to create more works or different different
Going in
books.
Another direction or
yeah,
something.
Isn't that, I believe that's how Robert Munsch does a lot of his books. Because he always names the character after whoever is dedicated to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've always noticed he uses real kids in his books. And if you look at the dedication, it always says, for example, in Something Good, the character's name is Taya. And it's dedicated to Taya. And I believe that actually is his daughter.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I need to double check that. But yeah, it's always inspired by a certain kid. So maybe that will be useful to you as well in your writing process, getting more new ideas and different experiences and interpretations from the audience.
I mean, inspiration comes from, I mean, Dreamland. I don't even know where the inspiration came for Dreamland. To be honest, I wouldn't be able to guess. But for the second one, Help, My Pillow's Trying to Eat Me. I woke up one morning and I have a dog. I was chatting with that earlier. It looks just like Toto. He was lying next to me on his back with his teeth out in the air, just like passed out completely. And I turn around, I'm thinking it's like he's trying to eat me. And it just kind of went from one side to the next. I thought, you know,
there it
that's
is.
A story right there in itself. And then there's another story. The title is still in process, but it's called Gabby's Hair. It's actually written for my niece. Her name's Gabby.
Okay.
So this one does not include the original character, but this one was an adaptation. It was originally called Gabby's Blue Eyes, but then it became Gabby's Hair. So she just lets her hair go crazy, and eventually it has to be tamed. And the mom's trying to do this, and she goes to school, gets in all this trouble because of this hair. Squirrels get in the hair.
Gabby sounds like a cool kid.
Oh, Gabby is a cool kid, both in book and in real life. Mm-hmm. So it works very well, but Gabby also is very stubborn, so mom doesn't like that. And I always try to incorporate a mom into the stories, except there was another story I did which is going to incorporate the original character, but instead it'll be his father that comes into it, not his mother.
Nice.
And the father breaks his glasses, and all day he has to get to work, and his kid's trying to help him get to work and get to the optometrist and get dressed, and the dad's just a klutz beyond belief already. So I mean, the story just goes from one to the next and the next. And trying to act out, by the way, the squirrel and the hair part, trying to act that part out, that was interesting. Even I had to take a step back and say, wow, Danny, it's a little far. No one's here, but still, stop.
That's what you think. He's got, your partner's got like secret cameras.
He probably does.
And if you're listening, set them up now. This is going to be gold.
And I'm computer illiterate, so he's probably got like a secret YouTube channel, which is like a million hits of me just doing stupid stuff at home.
Perched on top of the couch doing a squirrel.
Exactly.
You're already more famous than you know. Exactly. Well, you'd already started to segue or mention, you know, sort of your long-term or a long-term plan of having a website and this sort of thing. But that's one of the things we like to talk about on the show is what do you dream for the future? So, you know, if some author publishing house dude walked in here right now with $1 million deal and said, here you go, Danny, what would you do? Or is that what you would want? Is that what you would want to walk through the door?
I think anybody would want $1 million deal, but dealing with a publisher, it's great. It's a lot of hard work. I mean, it's a different perspective, and you lose a lot of control. But you don't lose all control. You have to relinquish part, because in essence, they're going to be making money off this.
So they have a whole team, and editors,
they have a lot more. They have a lot more history with this than I do, especially with my illustrator as well. Like, we both are brand new to this, so we really did let them, you know, take hold in a lot of ways. But I mean, when it came to the actual illustrations, and it came to, and for the most part, the wording, they pretty much left it alone. And that's great. That was ultimately what we kind of wanted, but we did want them to have a say in it as well. And in regards to a website, I personally would probably prefer to deal with just a website. Because I enjoy writing. Would I want it to be profession? I don't know. It's something I love doing, and it's always been something since a young age I've done just on my spare time, just for fun. It's kind of a creative outlet for me. I mean, music has always been that, but just at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can't be singing your lungs out. Well, you can, but my neighbors can't stand it.
Right.
So,
unless you live in the country all by yourself.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm from Chatham. So, I mean, it was a little easier in Chatham than it was here in London. But with the website, I mean, I can post books at any point in time. I can just write a short story and post it on there.
Right.
And that was ultimately what came from that. We wanted to have the kids do the pictures, and we wanted to be able to have a place to show that and showcase that. And that's where the idea for website came out. So
your dream job isn't necessarily to be an author.
You know, I've been so much in the theater world that dealing with, I mean, just being on stage and that's really what I would love to do.
That's more your dream.
Yeah,
okay.
But don't get me wrong. I mean, writing, I give you credit. I can't be a playwright. I've tried to write plays, and I try to act them. I can't even do it. Everything that I write is just awful for plays. And I know that. I was like, why can I take a script and I'll go on stage and it'll be fine, but I can't actually write the script.
Can't
but
turn
I can write
around.
Anything else. So ultimately, we just feel like the website is a great way to keep it ourselves and keep it individual and not feel like we have to do this, but it's more for fun.
Okay.
And that's really what we want. I mean, when I do theater, I don't want to do it for fun. When I sing, I want to do it for fun. When I write, I want to do it for fun. If it makes me money, that's fantastic. But ultimately, that was never the goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So we should talk a little bit about theater. That's our...
Yeah, that's a great segue there, Lou.
Well, I know, but I was gonna segue by saying, you know, like, you do children's books and stuff, and now you're doing Seussical.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, sort of the ultimate children's show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well,
so who are you in that? And tell the world about this show.
Tell the world about Seussical the musical. Well, Seussical.
And do you talk like
that in
the show?
Is that your
voice
in the show?
No, I have lots of different voices in the show. So, nice. No, that's the Cat in the Hat. That's Andrew Varcaris plays the Cat in the Hat.
Right.
And he narrates the show. And the amount of characters that come out of him, I'm jealous. I mean, I would have loved to have been the Cat in the Hat. His character is hilarious, and to be honest, no one can do it better than Andrew. I'll give him credit there.
He's definitely vocally dexterous.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it.
Thank you.
To me, he embodies that character so well. And when I decided to do Seussical, it was just out of the blue. I just thought, you know, I want to get back into the theater scene, and I was cast as Horton the Elephant. So as I was saying, I do ballads and things like that at karaoke. So Horton the Elephant, perfect fit for that. And
nice.
And Seussical, I mean, having done children's books, they didn't actually, Claire, who is our producer, didn't even know that I wrote children's books.
Yeah, she was telling me that on the phone the other day.
Probably the same day I told her, because we were doing a reading at the library the other day there, and some people were a little stressed out about it, and I said, you know, it's really simple, just interact with the kids and they're fine, and mentioned that I had done this before, and that's how all of, so since then, the last few days, just finding that out, I've now gotten to this level here, so...
He's a shooting star, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, and then Seussical, I thought Dr. Seuss, I read Dr. Seuss, and I guess you were talking about Robert Munsch earlier. Yeah. Those are the only kids' books I really read growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I heard about Seussical, I thought that'd be fantastic. And I just wanted to get back into the scene, and it has been so much fun.
So you guys open at the end of November.
Yeah.
And you've been rehearsing since... September?
Yeah, roughly September.
Yeah. And so tell us about that process. I mean, we know that you have acted before, but this is your first time in the London theater scene, yes?
It's my first time here in the London theater scene. I've done things in Chatham, and I've done things in Toronto as well, but nothing to this extent. And to be quite frank, I've never done anything for children before, like this sort of thing. So, and that's kind of what I found was exciting about it. I wanted to go, and I mean, I write children's books. Why not go and do this? And that was the original thought process behind that. I fell madly in love with it. It's so nice to be back singing again, acting. They don't let me dance. So I'm sure the audience will much appreciate that. If there's ever a show where you see me dancing, you'll understand that. So Horton the Elephant fits me perfectly for that. And that's why I definitely could not have been cast as Cat in the Hat. But
Danny writes and sings and acts, but doesn't draw. Doesn't dance.
Does not dance. I should have listed that earlier.
Yet.
That's what I always say. We're going to fix that.
Anytime anybody says, I don't do that, I always say, yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you can't in the future.
Well, it's not even that. I'll dance. I have no problem dancing, and I'm not someone that gets embarrassed. So I'll dance. I have no qualms with that in the slightest capacity, but they've, oddly enough, they've cut certain parts they've cut certain choreo parts for me because I just couldn't do them. And I would try, and I just looked ridiculous trying to do this. And so they
it is a fast process, and it is a pretty big show. Like, Seussical is not your simple show.
No.
It's very episodic, and it has tons of episodes and lots of big musical numbers. So
and all of his books are intertwined together. So, I mean, you're going to see all of Dr. Seuss's books intertwined, and there's so many different characters, and it's a storyline that you don't know. I mean, it follows Horton Hears a Who. However, every story is interjected into that.
You meet all of these other characters.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you really get to see Dr. Seuss brought to life. I mean, I would love to see something like this written for Robert Munsch as well. But Seuss was definitely the clear best choice to do a musical for, and it's a really great show.
Cool.
So in the rehearsal process, what have you found so far has been your biggest challenge, and what also has been surprisingly awesome?
Biggest challenge, I don't normally act in these sorts of shows, like kids' productions, because I did more serious roles. That's been the hardest thing for me, trying to...
Give us some examples of other roles you've played.
Javert.
Okay. Les
Miserables. So in high school, I did Javert. So I'm commonly known for Stars. I sing that for tons of auditions. It's my go-to song. So
that's the karaoke ballad, folks.
Yeah. That's such a good go-to song, though.
Yeah. It is. It's a great go-to song. Les Mis. You can never go wrong with Les Mis. But
you're going to be going on December 25th to see that.
Of course I am. Okay. I even told Brian, my partner, that. I was like, I know you don't know Les Mis or really like Les Mis, but I'm going to take you to it anyways.
I said the same thing to Sean.
All us theater geeks, we'll all be there.
Yeah, I was there in the theater for the 25th concert. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I have both DVDs at home. The 10th and the 25th, I think those are the two versions. And I have the book at home as well as the original movie. So I'm a Les Mis buff.
I have the original cassette in French. In French.
See, you just beat me there.
It's very long.
Yeah.
He said you can't go long. I was like, it's Les Mis. You can go long.
The book in itself is quite long. Yeah. So.
And I have seen the new Cameron McIntosh remount. I saw it in San Francisco this summer.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah, it was good. It was very, very similar. Mm. But because he's changed it to a proscenium arch, there are some significant changes here and there. And one or two of them were, in my opinion, definite improvements. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the rest of the blocking was the same. Like, you would recognize it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But the singing, not that the singing in previous productions weren't good. I think people have really learned how to attack that particular musical, because it's not easy. Well, and the quality of those instruments on that stage was outstanding.
It's interesting that you say that, because during the movie version, they actually, and I was watching, they were doing a short little clip of behind-the-scenes footage, they actually sang everything through an earpiece. Mm-hmm. So everything was sung live during the actual movie with Hugh Jackman and them. And they just had a piano playing, and the orchestra was filled in afterwards.
Exciting.
So kind of neat. So the characters themselves got to do exactly what they wanted. If they felt they needed to pause or prolong a sentence, slow it down, just to create that dramatic effect that they needed.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
One Day More. Yeah, One Day More is not sung the same way. None of these songs are sung the same way. They're very different. They build the same way, but the emotional aspects of each song, I mean, they're definitely a lot different. I'm so excited to see how they've interpreted this, especially onto a screen.
And I mean, who else is excited that Colm Wilkinson is there?
Oh, I saw Colm Wilkinson in a concert when we did Les Mis. He came down to Chatham, and he actually met with the cast. So we got to...
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Well, you know, I could name drop and say how my husband knows him and stuff like that.
But, yeah. Jealous.
Well, you know, very jealous. Autographed cassette. It's been around a while. Well, my husband and I met at Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
By phantom, by phone, right? When he was still there. So, and Christmas parties for Phantom in the early days when Cuomo was still there, was the entire company, everyone at Live Int, whether you were the person who polished the brass in the theater right on the way up to Colm, everybody was at the Christmas party, and he'd pull out his guitar and sing YouTube songs.
He's fantastic.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he is fantastic.
He truly is. So very, I think that this whole part, we've totally run the gamut today. Wow.
Yeah, we went all theater nerd there for
that's five minutes.
I haven't had a discussion about Colm Wilkinson in, I don't know, a long time. See, so.
Think of the tags we can put on this podcast and the people who will come to it. So, well, we've run the whole gamut. We've taught children's book. We've talked authors. We've talked acting. We've talked secret YouTube videos.
That's true.
Just before we wrap up, Carrie's looking. I want to ask something.
I do. I just want to know the second part of that, because you did talk about the challenges of Seussical. I wanted to know what was the most awesome thing so far.
Right. Thank you for reminding us.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Maybe you haven't had the most awesome yet.
No, I it's not even that. I've had a lot of really great things. Yeah, it hasn't opened yet. So. And anyone that's been theater knows the best part comes when you're on stage.
Yeah.
But you want to know what really? I've met a lot of great people. I think that's probably the best thing. I mean.
Yes. You have a good team.
Yeah. And I haven't been in the theater industry in a while here. And so when I came back in, I've gotten to meet people. And theater people are always different than everyone else. And we stick out like a sore thumb. And that's great. Any theater person loves that about themselves. However, when you put them all into one group, it is great.
Exponentially greater.
Exactly. Yes. And put a piano there. If there's a Steinway there, we're golden. So, exactly. So, I mean, the best part about it is, I mean, I've gotten to meet some fantastic people. Mm-hmm. People that I know are going to be friends for quite some time.
For sure.
And that's really what's been exciting to me. And really another exciting part is that they don't make me dance. They don't. So I'm not going to lie. I have to list that as something that's really exciting to me. So,
well, and
I did do Crazy for You, and I was the lead in Crazy for You.
Oh, really?
And I learned tap for it. And that could have been a better show.
You did your best.
I did my best. I won't lie there. I let my voice carry me as best I could, because my dancing shoes certainly did not. So.
Well, it is Gershwin, and the song is important.
That's true.
And I'm just going to also segue there that I know a number of cast members, but one particular cast member in your show is near and dear to my heart, Mr. Bill Hill, who has just joined you in the role of the Grinch.
And we just actually saw him the other day there. We did a run through, and that was the first time we got to sit down with Bill and see him. And the scene after him didn't go so well because everyone was laughing at the scene that just occurred.
Of course.
And they literally, I saw them practicing it, and they didn't take very long. And then as soon as Andrew and Bill get up there, and this part you guys are going to love, I won't spoil it, but Cameron and Andrew kind of just improv this one thing. Bill came in later and they just did it. Mm-hmm. That's how it went.
Right.
And it couldn't have been done any better.
Bill has real skill for that. And for anyone out there listening, I don't want to give it away as well, but I do know that there's going to be fun, interactive audience things with the Grinch. Mm-hmm. So if you have, it's perfect holiday fare. Mm-hmm. It's perfect for, anyone who has any kind of connection to Seuss or any connection with young people, bring them to the palace to see this show, because you're going to have fun. Yeah. If Bill is your scene partner, I can speak from experience. You are going to have fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's just no question. So lots of love out there for Bill Hill today.
And the actual show itself is only roughly about 90 minutes long. So we've cut it down because it's just an easier show to see that way.
For sure.
And so it flows. I mean, the way Cameron's cut this show is fantastic.
Do you have an earlier start time for this?
We start at 7.
Okay.
I believe it's 7. If I'm wrong, I'm going to hear about that.
Well, go to palacetheater.ca, ladies and gentlemen, to find out, order your tickets, and
as well, and
Twitter all that
and Facebook,
stuff.
We're all there.
For sure, yes.
Yeah. And when does the show open?
End of November,
at
right?
End of November. I think it's the 29th or the 30th.
We will provide links in our podcast description.
And 2 weekends at the Palace Theater. Mm-hmm.
So it's coming up soon.
I know. I can't wait.
That's exciting.
Every day we're doing run-throughs, and every day it's just something new comes up, like we were talking about earlier. And I can't wait to see where we are at that point.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Well, I'm getting the wrap-up signal from Luke, so this has been an absolutely delightful conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today, Danny.
Thank you for having me.
Audience, if you would like to stay with us, we're going to do our traditional segue to some interesting piece of music that Danny has agreed to sing with us today at last minute as we sprung in on him. So join us in just a moment for some silly musical reference. And thank you again for listening to us on The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter and at our website, www.theloversthedreamersandyou.com. Thanks.
On the 15th of May, in the jungle of Newell, in the heat of the day, in the cool of the pool, he was splashing, enjoying the jungle's great joys, when Horton the elephant heard a small noise.
When the clouds away, on my way to where the air is through, can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street? Come and play, everything's A-okay. How to get to Sesame Street.
Happy birthday, Sesame Street.
Happy birthday, Sesame Street.
From the lovers, the dreamers, and you.
Here's to 30 or 43 more years.
43 years.
43.
Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street?
Thanks for joining us at The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You. We'd love to hear from you, and you can do that at theloversthedreamersandyou.com or by finding us on Twitter or Facebook. This has been a Luke Bainbridge production. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, and we'll see you next time for another edition of The Lovers, The Dreamers, and You.
Life's like a movie, write your own ending. Keep believing, keep pretending. We've done just what we've set out to do. Thanks to the lovers, the dreamers, and you.